And every race, every marathon or greater distance that I've done, there comes some point where I'm like, this was a really bad idea. Like, why did I think this was smart? And then time passes by and you're like, oh yeah, no, I got this. I can totally do this.
You're listening to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast, and this is Trail Talk, where we have casual conversations with all kinds of runners. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. Whenever trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where our conversations might go. So there aren't too many topics that are off limits for us. So if you're ready, let's get started. Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Ultramarathon Mindset Trail Talk. This week, my guest is Todd Chandler. Todd is a friend of mine. We have been running the same trails ever since I started trail running. He has been part of the running group. He was there when I got there. He's given me often good encouragement and advice as a new trail runner. And this year, he had a post that got my attention. I thought he would make a good guest. He coined a term called ultra couching because he has suffered an injury that has kept him off of the running trails for a significant amount of time. And so he had a post talking about how to deal with the emotional side of an injury that keeps you from running. Most of us who are runners, if we don't have our normal time of running, we can get kind of irritable and depressed. There's a lot of emotions that go along when we have an injury. So he has had some great advice in his post about how to deal with those injuries. So I wanted to bring him on and have a conversation about that emotional, the mindset about how to deal with injuries as a runner, as a trail runner, especially, and get through that time with the least amount of turmoil in our life as possible. Because there's a physical side of healing an injury, but there's also the mental side. So we're talking about both of those and some fun things as well. So hope you enjoy the episode. And so here it is. Here is my conversation with Todd Chandler. For those who don't know who you are and who will hear this on the podcast or see this, tell us a little bit about who you are and just about who you are. That would be the best way to start.
Sure. So I'm in Kansas City with you, and I'm like you in the prime of my life and started running much later in life. It's been kind of a fun journey for guys like us to be out running on the trails with usually crowds that are much younger than us. Mm-hmm. Really enjoyable. I was on a quest. Here's kind of the short version of how I ended up doing trail running. I was on a quest to try to do 50 marathons to win a bet with a buddy of mine, and I had 10 years to do that. And I wanted to get as many states as I could. I wasn't diehard that all 50 had to be in different states, so I was trying to knock them down. Well, a buddy of mine wanted to do the Pikes Peak Marathon. And it was Colorado, a different state, and a new opportunity for me to do it. So I started training with him, and that's when we ran out at WICO for the first time, was trying to train for that. And we ran the summer WICO, the 20-miler before that. I think that was the summer of 2014 was when I did Pikes Peak. And I just fell in love with this community. I mean, the aid stations and everything that was out there was like, this is a very different vibe than the road running that takes place. And soon after that, I started going to Bar, which is where you and I see each other quite regularly. Bar is an acronym for Beer Appreciation Run, and it combines two of my favorite activities of running and sitting around drinking beer afterwards. And after that, I was hooked.
Yeah. So you started in 2014, or you'd been running roads before that? You started running trails in 2014.
Yeah, I'd been running roads prior to that. I've been an on-again, off-again runner for all of my life. All of my life's too strong a word, for a long time. for a lot of other people's lives. I didn't run in high school or college. I was never athletic. And I'd run a few times in college and started to enjoy it But once I got out of college and was working for a couple of years, we lived about 3 miles away from where I worked, and I started a habit of biking into work with two suits on my bike. I'd shower at work, and then I'd run home. And then the next day, I'd run in, wear the second suit, and then bike home.
Okay.
And so I was doing that rhythm quite regularly. That was back in the 90s. And a buddy that I worked with was planning to run the Chicago Marathon. I was living in Lafayette, Indiana at the time. And I said, oh, that sounds kind of interesting to run a marathon. And that was in May. The marathon was in October. And so I started training. And with that base, I was pretty surprised with how easily I could add mileage to 6, 9, 12 miles. But after that, it started getting really hard. And in fact, I had planned to not go up and run the marathon because I couldn't get a 19-mile training run done. And he's like, you paid the fee. It's, you know, 2 hours up to Chicago. Let's go up and have some fun. And I finished that marathon. It was one of the most motivating days of my life, you know. 25,000 people in the streets of Chicago cheering me on, trying to get me to the finish line, and it got me there. So that was pretty cool. And then I immediately quit running. 10 years before I ran another marathon. And then I had an IT band issue after my third marathon, and I quit for a while. And it was probably 2010 that I got back into it. And it, and what really prompted it was I never ran 5Ks or 10Ks. Like, I started with a marathon.
That okay.
was the race that I had done. And have you done any road marathons?
When my first running career, I was in my late 20s. I set a goal to run a marathon, and so I did a couple of 10Ks in there. But my goal, they said the Lincoln Marathon, Lincoln, Nebraska, was flat, and it was fairly easy for your first marathon. So that was I think probably 81 when I did that. So, and then. Like you, I did it, and then I quit. I mean, not immediately, but yeah, I checked it off. It's like, okay, yeah, but I never set another goal, and so I just kept running. I ran less and less. It's like I'd go out and run for run, but it just wasn't something that I did consistently, and eventually I just can't admit. Well, I'm not a runner anymore just because I can't go out and do this.
So do you remember when you were running the Lincoln Marathon, you hit that point where the half marathon people go one direction and the marathon people go the other direction?
I don't know if they had half marathon then.
Okay.
I mean, this was like back when I started running, I did not ever hear about a half marathon. So
okay.
I don't know that was an option
back then.
It was actually after I quit that the half marathon kind of became a thing.
So. I said, Eric, if we did only half the distance, what do we need to do to get you to stay in the running community?
Yeah.
So for me, I'd done three marathons kind of leading up to that point, and all of them had that Y in the road where mm-hmm. the half marathon people go one direction and the marathon people go another. And I always felt a real sense of pride of like, oh, I'm the marathon runner. I'm not doing the half.
Yeah.
But when I got back into running, and I'd have to look it up, but I think it was around 2010, I did like a 10-mile race. It was a Bruise and Blues race that a friend had talked me into doing. And then I signed up for the Kansas City half because it's all I could really do at that point. I hadn't been running for a while. And I hit that point, and I had to go to the half instead of the full.
Mm-hmm.
And it hurt. Like it hurt my pride. I was like, I've never done this before. And so that's when I started getting on my quest to try to do the 50 marathons. And then I made a crazy bet with a friend of mine that I had to do 50 within 10 years.
50 marathons within 10 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, what was great about that bet, it was called the New Hampshire Compulsion.
Okay.
And, because we wrote it up while we were hiking mountains up in New Hampshire, and he was a big CrossFitter, so he had a CrossFitter component of it. But I got credit for every 25 miles in a longer race. So if I did a 50 miler, it counted as two marathons.
Oh, okay. Well, that's handy.
Yeah. If I did a 100 miler, it counted as four. Mm-hmm. And so that's really where I got into ultra running. So it's like, oh, I can bang these things out.
Yeah. Because I wondered how you made that jump from of course, once you get into the trail community, the ultra marathons are that ultra marathons for trail runners are kind of the thing.
Sure. And absolutely.
So But yeah, so I wondered how you made that jump from marathons to ultra marathons.
Yeah, so the Psycho Wico Winter Edition. So Psycho Wico Summer was my first introduction to trail running and to the trail nerds community.
Okay.
And loved it. And then the Psycho Wico Winter was my first 50K. So that was my first branching out past the marathon
past
distance.
The marathon distance. Okay. Oh, that's kind of cool. So then you, where did you go from there? So you were still on your quest. I'm taking, if you made the bet in 2010,
I made the bet in 2013. So and I'd have to go back and take a look at it. So I was kind of dabbling. I had five marathons done when I made the bet.
Okay.
And those five counted towards the overall total. So I really only had 45 I had left to do. Yeah, it was in September of 2013 that I made that bet. So I finished early.
Okay.
Finished last summer with Kettle Moraine, which was my second 100 miler. And that was kind of cool to end on such a big thing that way. The buddy I made the bet with lives in Nashville, and we did have a clause that both of us could win the bet because it was totally up to you whether you got your task accomplished or
right,
not.
Okay.
He finished his before I did mine, and so I traveled to Nashville, and we went out to dinner. I made him a nice little medal that he got for it, and made a speech in his honor and treated him to dinner. And then when I won, he did the same for me. He came to Kansas City, had some good barbecue.
Cool. So did he finish before you then?
Yeah.
Okay.
He claims he still had the more achievable, better side of the bet, and I claim I had the more achievable side of the bet. Mine just took longer to do. His was he had to score in the top 5% of his age group for the CrossFit Games in a given year. But to me, that had an element of failure in there. It was possible he could never achieve that because he couldn't control how other people performed. He could only control how he performed.
Right.
I could finish 50 marathons totally independent of how other people did.
Mm-hmm.
And so mine took a lot more steps, literally, to be able to get there. But it was fun. It was really fun for us to jab each other, keep each other updated. And I'm very into data and mm-hmm. analytics. And so it was a very fun thing to track and to put together that way.
Yeah. Well, and so is data part? Is that just part of your DNA, or do you work with data? Is that your job, or where did that come from? Because I see your posts, and there's a lot of data in some of your posts and some of the things that you do to kind of keep yourself going.
Yeah, it's probably just part of my DNA, and I do like numbers. We have a family joke as part of why I had the twinkle in my smile. As I said, I do like numbers because whenever one of our kids we homeschooled all our kids, and whenever one of them pushed back on math, we'd say, well, it's not math, it's just numbers. And so they've thrown that back at us a couple of times. Yeah, well, it's not math, it's just numbers. I have a master's degree in industrial technology, which is very statistics based and heavy. And I really enjoyed that aspect of that degree. What I do day in, day out, I don't necessarily deal with numbers.
Okay. But I take it you're motivated because I'm one of the things that I see that you do is you have a thing called Outrun Todd Challenge that you do. Yeah. And the graphs that you make for this are very detailed. I mean, it's like there's a video that tracks whoever you're competing against that month and tracks your miles like almost daily. And so it's just very creative. Is that something you did to motivate you or to help inspire others?
Well, there's a couple layers of questions there. So
I knew that. I'm good at doing that.
I do the same thing. I'm like, let me ask you a question, then I ask five questions. The charts and the video really pull together two of my passions. So I love doing video editing, and I love doing charts. And the technology and the world of data visualization has gotten so exciting around creating charts that move. and interact. And so that's just been kind of fascinating for me to see what could be done in that area and helping out. So that pulls that in. The Outrun Todd Challenge, I have been so thrilled with. I have a lot of fun in the running community, and I have a lot of fun poking some of my friends. And so 2019, so data related, mm-hmm. prior to 2019, I would regularly post monthly updates of my mileage run compared to how I did the year before. And as data grew, I would do it how I compared to the year before and the previous year before that. So I could say, you know, March of 2018, I ran this many miles. March 2019, I ran this many. I slacked off. I didn't do as many as I did. Or, you know, well, that's kind of nice. I ran more. And I had a couple of years back to back of where I had increased my mileage year over year, so that I could keep doing that. Well, 2019, I just got a wild idea. And I decided to declare it the year of my pettiness. So I, instead of comparing to myself, at the end of the month, I would compare myself to a friend of mine who ran less than me, so that it would always appear as though I ran more, which I did, because I'd pick them after the fact, so it was easy to compare. And I'd call out people who didn't run as far as I had run. Well, as the year went on, more and more people caught on to what I was doing, and some of my friends were like, well, he hasn't caught me yet, and he's not going to catch me now. And so, particular, Scott Stith, who's a friend of ours, he was my last target to get, and December came along. He's like, there's no way you're going to catch me. So it was a little bit more of a head-to-head. He knew I was coming for him. I beat him by half a mile, by the way. I wanted to be both in the live broadcast and on the recorded podcast, that everybody understands I did run more than him in December of 2019. But the idea was born about, well, would it be more fun, instead of picking on people after the fact, to give them a chance to compete up front? And so I reached out to the 12 people I called out in 2019 and said, hey, would you like a rematch? This time you know in advance which month it is and what we need to do, and let's bet some tacos and beer on it. And 11 out of the 12 said, hell yes, I'm in. Like, count me in. I want to take you down. And the first 2 months, I got my clock cleaned. Morgan outran me by over 100 miles. Bob did pretty much the same thing. I was dealing with a little bit of an injury issue in February. I started the month with a 50K and ended it with a 100 miler, so I didn't have much of a chance of catching up. Both of them hit new PRs in terms of mileage run, and that really got me excited about this, in that it's been very motivating to kind of keep people engaged and chasing things, and it's kept me very motivated and very excited and going after it. It's exhausting, though, because, like, I finish a big month, you know, in particular March, I ran 40 miles on the last day of the month to beat my competitor and Peter. You know, the next day, the clock is ticking that I got to outrun somebody else. So there's no time off for me, where my competitors only have to do it for 1 month.
Yeah. So in all of that, one of the things that you talked about was being injured. Did that, do you think that contributed to injury, or how did your injury come about?
Yeah, no, I think that totally contributed. So pride is really what drove my major injury. You know, and thinking that I was invincible. And particularly, I had a great month in March. I was trained up for a new distance for me. So I was planning to run a 200-mile race.
Okay.
Had new territory, and so I was really in great shape and feeling good, and I went for it. Well, then, you know, as I kept pushing that through April and then into May, I just think I had some overusage, and so I ended up with a couple of stress reactions in my foot and some bursitis, and you know, so part of that is letting that heal up and then coming back with some more strength training to be able to build myself to be a little bit more invincible next time around. Mm-hmm.
So what 200 mile were you planning to run?
Pottawatomie.
Okay.
It's in Illinois, and it's a 10-mile loop that you run 20 times, 72 hours to complete it. You know, as COVID happened, it got canceled. It was scheduled for the first weekend in April, and, Peter and I did get out there and run the course in February. And Peter was planning to run it, and then local running legend, Leah Anderson, was also planning to run it. So it was kind of cool to be prepping for that. Mm-hmm. And that's my next race so far.
That's your next race for next year.
Yeah.
So did you run? And I'm going by memory here. Did you run 100 miles in the trolley trail?
I did
this year. Was that in April?
It was in January.
In January. Okay. I couldn't remember when that was.
Yeah. So, I've always been, not always. When you run, well, you know this, I mean, kind of what did completing the 100 miler do for your confidence level and how you could handle task after that?
It was like, well, yeah, of course I can run 100 miles.
Right.
Why would I not be able to run 100 miles?
Well, and when stupid little piddly nits and gnats come at you, whether it's work related or just other stresses of life, you're like, I can handle this. I ran 100 miles, right? And so it's a huge, doing tough stuff is great confidence boost for the long run. And I was fascinated by people who did self-supported 100 milers. And Leia, who she's unbelievable as a beast. Her grit and determination and the strength that she's put through is just top notch. She was very fascinated in doing a 100 miler. And in fact, we were thinking we might try to do it at Shouse, like 100 miles around a quarter mile loop, just kind of keep going.
I remember that. Was that supposed to be the winter? No, that wasn't the winter Shouse.
It's tough to do during the winter because the park actually closes.
Right, the park closes. Yeah, I remember hearing some rumblings about doing that at Shouse, which by the way is a quarter mile loop, and to do 100. And I thought that fascinated me. I was going to sign up for that because the mental discipline to do 100 miles on a quarter mile loop is like, well, of course, yeah, that's like, let's sign me up, let's do it.
So one of the ultra runner writers that lay at home, dropping his name right now. But anyway, he spent a year running pretty much a self-supported 100 miler every month. And he did one around the high school track. And I think that was where the idea really hit us about, could we do this on a shortened distance? Well, the weather was bad and we didn't want to, you know, be on the trails when we shouldn't be on the trails. And there were a few other things that came to play with it. And the weather for this weekend that we set aside to do this self-supported 100 miler was just horrific. I mean, it was like ice storm. Many of the things were closing down. Leia and her husband own a coffee shop down near the Trolley Trail, Second Best Coffee. And she said, well, what if we based out of the coffee shop and ran the trolley trail? And I said, sure, let's do it. And so it was basically a 10 mile out and back. But we changed it up quite a bit because as the ice came down, we were running with ice tracks and screwed shoes, and that really took a toll on our feet after a while. Mm-hmm. So
especially
as the night went on, the streets were clear, but the trolley trail was still icy. And so we moved to streets around the neighborhood and ran for that a little bit. But we had lots of friends come out and support us and run different parts of that with us.
Yeah, I remember seeing that. I can't remember. I think I may have been out of town when you guys were doing that, but I remember seeing that.
I have so many great memories from that experience, but one of them was I was competing against Morgan that month. So it was my first thing. He was 100 miles ahead of me the day we started. And that the first 10 miles we did, we passed him while he was out running on the trolley trail. And so I just had this big giant grin on my face because I was like, I'm gonna run 100 miles, I'm gonna catch you today. Now Morgan ran 10 miles that day, so I didn't catch him, and then I didn't run very much after that for the rest of the month, so he ended up getting another 100 miles ahead of me. But it was fun to have that moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're almost there,
that glimpse of maybe we are in the same league.
Yeah. So how do you?
You did a self-supported run on your birthday.
I did. I did an attempt. It was the heat got me. Yeah, I went for 63K, and I got right at 30 miles. And so, but and the
it's tough.
It's tough.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think I could have done it had the heat not, it was just the humidity. This summer has been so, I don't know what it is. Cause last summer I didn't seem to have the kind of trouble that I've had this summer. And I've talked to other people, other runners who the humidity has really slowed those down. But I was pleased with even with the last miles that I walked, I still was in my target pace for the, for doing basically 30 miles. My target was to do 40 miles in 12 hours, and I did 30 in 9. So,
nice.
I came in on pace, but it was just like I was done. My body. Actually, I was done at 25 miles, but I was 5 miles from my car. So my body said, "You're not running anymore." And so that last 5 miles was a pretty slow walk.
So if you'd just been 15 miles away from your car, you'd have totally done it.
Yeah, that's all I needed to do was running out and back. But no, that was a good day. That was probably, for me, I think one of the best birthdays I've had. I mean, just because we rented a shelter house, sure. And got to see my running friends out there on the trail with me, and Teresa Cummings came and ran a 10-mile loop with me and just hung with me, and we talked, and it was a great day. So
that's awesome.
But that was self-supported. I had my car kind of as a
aid station.
An aid station. So
I was fortunate for when COVID hit, in the standpoint that I did not have a lot of races on the schedule, and because I had been chasing that 50 marathons goal, I really had done a lot of races kind of back to back, and I'd done a lot of pacing for marathons, which was kind of a nice free way to do a marathon. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say raced out, but I was kind of like, I'm ready to just run and have some fun. And so 2020, the theme was less races, more adventures. And so I wasn't quite as impacted by the sheer number of cancellations that have taken place. Did you have any races that you had planned to do that got canceled?
Yes, I had planned, I'd signed up for the Hawk. The Hawk 100. I was going to get redemption for the DNF from last year. It was like I felt good about my performance last year, but it rained, and you can't control that. And I was looking forward to that one.
You and I have the Venn diagram of DNF in that race together. And
I forgot, because you had an injury really early on.
I'm really sounding like a feeble runner of the amount of injuries that we've had. But that was one of my favorite memories. Was I had forgot my camera back at the Land's End aid station, and so I turned around to run back and get it, and I passed you as I was going back in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to catch back up to Yvonne, because she and I were running together, and so then I passed you on the way out, and then took a step that just like nothing snapped, but that's what the way it felt. It was like something snapped in him, and then you came up on me, and I was limping pretty bad at that point, and you very caringly stopped, asked me how I was doing, I told you what was happening, and then you went ahead to the next aid station and must have told people what was going on there, because when I came into that aid station, Colleen and Leah were like, they met me like partially out of the trail, like, what's going on? And they had some pain cream for me to put back on, and muscle, worked out my muscle best they could, and tried to get me back out there to do that Bunker Hill round. But when I came back in from that, it was clear I wasn't going to make it.
Yeah. I'd forgotten that you had that happen. But I had in my grand plans, I had intended to do Javelina 100. That was the race I was training for. It was far enough away from the Hawk 100. I knew I could recover and do another 100, in that time frame. But when with the economy that happened at the first of the year, I told my wife, I said, I said, we could probably try to do this, but no. I mean, our business was down so much for that, and I just said, I'm not going to commit the kind of the kind of finances it's going to take to travel to to Phoenix and do that race.
Sure. So, what's on your radar screen for what you'd like to do once things clear back up?
I have been looking at, there's one called Across the Years.
Okay.
Again, down in Phoenix, the first of the year. We had booked a trip to Hawaii, but because of all the stuff that was going on, it was in February, and it was just like there was no guarantee that it's still going to be open even by then. So we cut that back. So that was one of the things I've looked at. I will probably look at the Javelina again, and then I deferred my entry to the Hawk. So. Kind of been thinking about Bandera in the back of my mind, looking kind of January for some winter races that I can do, but I haven't got anything definite that I've got. Right now I'm just kind of running for fun. I mean, that kind of what you were saying, just the joy of getting out and moving and being out, and so I'm not putting in the long miles that I would if I were training for a 100-mile race, but my goal is, I'm kind of shooting for next year, next September to be in shape to run, effectively 100 miles. And I'd like to break 30 hours.
Yeah.
That's, well, in the Javelina, that's the cutoff. So,
so finishing, so you'll
finish,
break.
Yeah, finishing it. But, that was my goal. So this year I've been focusing a lot on speed. I was running hills, and my speed has increased. I'm about 2 minutes a mile faster this year than I was last year.
Holy cow, that's a huge jump.
On both trails and road. I mean, my road times, it's like I can go a long ways, but I'm not real fast. And my road times this year around 12 minutes a mile. I was about 14, 15 last year. My trail times are around 14 average, and I was 16. Pretty consistently last year. So
that's awesome. Are you doing specific speed work?
No.
It's kind of naturally getting.
I did hills. I did some hill work January, February, March. There's a group of hills called the Sisters. Where it is. They're just for Kansas. I mean, they're a pretty decent set of hills. And I did 3 miles out and back on those, 3 or 4 miles out and back on that section. So that was kind of my spring. And then when it got hot and the trail's overgrown, I switched to mountain bikes. But the speed came from going into sandals, doing minimalist running. I had to shorten my stride, my form tightened. I was already doing like chi running, so I was kind of trying to stride midfoot. My stride, my form got tightened up real by running barefoot. And then because of that, shortening my stride, I had to increase my cadence from about 165, 170 to kind of a minimum of 180.
Sure.
And between faster cadence, I think, is what sped me up. So.
That's amazing what a difference that can make. It can almost seem counterintuitive, but just that turnover is so impactful. So.
Yeah, short strides and it feels good. I mean, I feel comfortable at that pace, I don't run the whole time, so I've got a power walk, and I can walk a 13-minute mile. So,
do you do that by feel, or are you like kind of more the Galloway method, where you?
I
run a certain time and then walk.
I don't have. It's just by feel. I was doing heart rate training last year, and so I still kind of go by that. I have a higher than normal heart rate for my age. So usually if my heart rate gets up around 160, I usually back off and walk.
Sure.
I can usually run and that happens if it's a long gradual uphill. So, if I push very hard, I can get it up to 160 pretty easy.
That's just because you're such a passionate guy. I mean, you care so
much. Well, even when I was younger, I mean, back when I was running marathons before, I mean, they used to say 220 minus your age was where you're supposed to train at. Yeah. And that was back before. I mean, in order to get your heart rate, you had to stop and actually hold your finger on your neck and count the seconds.
And so one time my heart rate was always higher than what they said. And I thought, okay, so I just went out and ran just hard as I could for a mile and stopped, took my heart rate. It was 230. And I was like, okay, I'm above the chart of what they said it's supposed to be. And I said,
were they supposed to support my age or add my age?
Yeah. Some people have a higher than normal heart rate. Right. And I've found out I'm not that. And ask somebody one time, what happens if you run too hard? And he says, oh, you'll pass out. I said, okay.
your heart will say enough.
Yeah. But yeah. Usually now I run out of air. That's kind of the thing that I go by. But,
yeah.
That's kind of what I've got. I'm looking at. I don't have anything nailed down yet. I'm still like, yeah, I want to do some races. I miss the racing. You'd ask about races. There's one coming up this weekend. We're doing the Prairie Spirit Trail.
Yeah.
And so, are you running on that?
No.
Yeah. That's, no, I forgot. I'm sorry. That was a terrible question to ask. I knew that.
I still haven't run over a mile. So. Yeah.
Yeah. I got all caught up in the excitement. It was like, oh yeah, we're running. I'm on a team and I've got a 13 and a half mile stretch. I've got two sections. So
yeah,
I'm running this weekend and I'm also crewing for somebody who's doing the whole thing. So, Teresa says I'm going to crew for her and then run my section. So
she's such a delight.
Oh yeah. Yeah. She's such a strong runner.
I was just recently out with somebody and a female passed by and he was like, you got chipped. And I was like, man, that's a huge compliment because the females that I know in this sport are much stronger than the males. It's consistently gritty how strong they are.
Yeah. And that's the thing that is just amazing to see, ultra running and trail running. It can be messy and dirty, and it's like these ladies get out there and just keep on going.
Yep.
And I wanted to talk about you. You said something about your injury and how you cope with that. And so you put out this graphic, this infographic that was you called it ultra couching.
Yeah.
So you went from ultra running to ultra couching. So,
because of this crazy bet I made with 12 friends of mine and the amount of running I did to try to keep up with it, the injury that happened this summer, it's kind of tough when you have a good run of things and you feel like you're invincible and something like that happens that sidelines you. I'm amazed by some of the grit within our community that people run through the pain that they have. I feel fairly fortunate that I feel like I kind of know the difference between hurt and pain. And so, hurt's going to be natural as it comes along, but pain, like I felt like I was really doing damage and I backed off. And I just have a great team of coaches and a chiropractor and a doctor that helped me work through that and identify fairly quickly, like, no, you should not be running right now. And it's amazing how much time I had on my hands when I wasn't running, when I was in pain. The coaching community that Leia and Colleen have put together are just absolutely fantastic. And so they're Team Sparkle Productions. And so that Team Sparkle community, I just did a post within that community about, I wasn't feeling sorry for myself. I wasn't down or anything, but I'm an avid learner. And I was curious how other people were dealing or coping with injuries. Because as runners, if we don't get an injury once in a while, I don't know that we're pushing ourselves hard enough. And I was blown away by the ideas that the group shared and just different things that I hadn't thought of or considered. And so as I started putting those all together, they really fell into three big buckets, which when I worked at Payless Shoe Source, our my boss loved the head, heart, hands model. So, what do you got to think to be able to do it? What do you got to believe to be able to do it? Do with your hands to actually make it happen. And these just naturally fell into that bucket. So there were several things that you can think to kind of help you with that. There are several things you can believe that can help you with that. And then there's several things you can do to help you with that. And the term ultra couching actually came from Amy Vilt. She was the one that threw that back as one of the answers on it. And I loved that term, and I tied right into it. But if you're an ultra runner and you're sidelined, you should be ultra couching.
You should be ultra.
So I think there were some great ideas. And then, you know, my love of data visualization, there's not a lot of data on this. I think there's one chart on there, but it's still infographic-esque. It was kind of fun to put that together. And of course, that just led right into making a video around it too.
Yeah. You did the infographic and you did a video. So I'll try to link that video at when we're done with this.
Sure.
Link the video on this page, so if people watch this in the replay, they can see that. So your YouTube channel is under your name, right? Is it?
Yeah. If you search Todd Chandler.
Todd Chandler on YouTube. Yeah.
There's a pro football player named Todd Chandler and a wrestler named Todd Chandler that might pop up right before me, but I'll be on that main page.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. I do have a question that Ted asks if you're planning on being injured in October.
No, tell him I'm building a base for October, and he can either just start saving up now for tacos or he can start getting out and running. So Ted is clearly on, for those on the podcast, Ted is my October target. And because Ted's listening, I will say this to the whole group. Ted was my trump card all last year. I knew that I could play the Ted card at any time throughout the year, because at any given month, I run more mileage. I'm not worried at all about that. And the fact that I can't see him comment right now is really quite nice to me.
That's good. Well, he just put a comment on I can't say on Facebook according to Facebook's algorithm, and probably get us kicked off of here.
My little poke got the desired result I was looking for.
That's good.
Yeah. We are so lucky in Kansas City. I guess when I talk with others, runners in other communities, it's just a really strong community overall. And the fun that we have, the poking and the accountability we have with each other is fantastic. And something like this with the ultra couching, where I kind of put that call out there, I was amazed how many people were reaching out, like, if you want to talk, we can talk or do that. I was like, I'm fine. I was kind of curious about this, but it was great to see how many people had so many great ideas and to realize this was a natural part of it. Barrett, who's a mutual friend of ours, shared a quote around that I just thought was absolutely fantastic about, and it was from a Trail Runner magazine. David Roche had talked about the fact that if you're not pushing yourself or you're not running strong enough, then you're not enough at the limits to be able to do that, and that injury is just a natural part of that. Mm-hmm. So that's been kind of my rally. That, and I've really been enjoying taking care of myself and indulging in things. So I've been drinking more and eating more and enjoying great things.
Yeah,
I've been craving lobster lately. Do you know a good place in Kansas City to get good lobster?
I have not done lobster.
I don't think that's in Kansas City. I think I'm gonna have to leave.
There was a place, Jalisco.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a Mexican place. I mean, I know they fly in fish they fly in seafood every day.
Okay.
So Jalisco is great. And I think they're down like in Argentine district.
Bob and I ran Vermont, I went to Maine a couple of days before, and I ate so many lobster rolls up there. And, I just was, I had that shirt on the other day, and I was like, man, it's been a long time since I've had lobster. And, you know, I've had lots of barbecue, though. I've played to the strengths of Kansas City.
Okay, yeah.
So are you a taco eater? Do you have a good taco recommendation in Kansas City?
Down in the River Market, is it Kansas City Taco?
Yeah.
It's right up the street from Opera, the Opera House. Are you familiar with the River Market area?
I know of this place. Yes, actually, I think I've been there. Yeah, that is good time.
It's hard to.
And I think they've got a food truck too that they go around.
Yes, they have a food truck. It's a small place, and I haven't been there since COVID. But I mean, because they were packed in before. You know, whenever we went, I mean, the seating was limited because it's a small place. But their tacos were really good, and they had some.
Yeah, I got to add my list of places to check out.
And
honestly, I've bought more tacos than I've been given out of this bet. October's coming though, so somebody's gonna.
So you'll have a chance to buy that.
Yeah, I'll have a chance.
Steve Crutchfield said for lobster, red lobster, and and then Ted says it's right there in the name. So.
I love this guy.
Of course, that was, I mean, I knew what you were asking about lobster. I was like, I didn't even consider that.
I'm sorry. My mind just went to the butter garlic rolls at Red Lobster.
speaking of barbecue in Kansas City, it's like, this is going to be a Kansas City show. Have you had Slaps Barbecue?
I haven't. So I work out 3 to 4 times a week, literally right across the street from it at Collins Gym, Phys Ed KC.
Oh, I didn't know that she was. I didn't know that she was there. I thought she was like Midtown Kansas City.
She was, and she's moved to this location. She's been there a little over a year, so it is literally right across the street. So next time you're at Slaps,
yeah, there's a coffee shop right next door too.
I saw one time you had posted that you said that was the best in Kansas City.
Yeah.
Colleen is vegan, so I always have a tough time going and working out at her gym and then just like walking right across the street to Slap. But I just, maybe sometime I need to show up with sunglasses. And
I haven't been since COVID came. I think they were shut down for a while, and I don't know if they're back open again or not. But they
look like they have expanded their outdoor eating quite a bit. Like they have kind of that little garage next to them. Mm-hmm. They have like a deck up on top.
They have a deck up on top and
awnings up there, and then they put all kinds of picnic tables out there on that gravel lot out in front of the place. So
okay.
Yeah. What do you like?
Brendan and I will get a full slab of ribs and cut them in half. And they do well with ribs. Their brisket's good. Burnt ends, they're good.
That's all good, huh?
Yeah. Now their sausage and their chicken is like, that's okay. But I mean, that's not something. Usually, if I go for a barbecue, it's either going to be the brisket, the burnt ends, or the ribs.
Yeah.
So those are the kinds of things. You know, no matter where I am. So.
Have you eaten at Hog Jaw down in North Kansas City?
No, I have not.
I'm not a big sausage. I like sausage a lot, but they have both Italian and what do they call the other sausage? They've got two smoked sausage and Italian sausage. Mm-hmm. And their working man special, which is a sandwich. They've got great buns there, and their French fries are incredible. But you can split the meat, and so like a brisket and Italian sausage.
Ooh,
that's really good.
Yeah, that's North Kansas City is not a place that we get to very often, and so I have to put that on the list. But, so how did you get back off of barbecue? Because it's like for people who are listening to this podcast, I mean, Kansas City is like we have a kind of a claim on barbecue, and other cities pretend to be barbecue capitals, but. You know, Kansas City, we're pretty much like, yeah, we're the barbecue people. So barbecue place. So the barbecue discussion. You get two people from Kansas City, and we can take a long time talking about the various places to get barbecue.
So much barbecue in so little time.
Yeah. So if you're visiting Kansas City when travel starts coming, check out Slaps and Hog Jaw and any other place. So you can find barbecue place everywhere in Kansas City. Tell me about you said that your infographic kind of came from other people. Did you have to go through any kind of the things that you talked about to kind of in dealing with your injury? I mean, what What have you found? What have you found helpful? And you know, what's been a challenge?
So yes, of course, I worked through some stuff, and I just recently got back from a trip to Colorado, which was absolutely fantastic. And I love, and I have several friends who are enthralled with climbing 14ers. Ted, who's listening, is really cleaning my clock on that, and the amount of, that he's done. But every one of them that I hiked, there was a moment like hiking up there, I'm like, why did I think I could do this? Like, this is really tough. And and every race, every marathon or greater distance that I've done, there comes some point where I'm like, this was a really bad idea. Like, why did I think this was smart? And then time passes by and you're like, oh yeah, no, I got this. I can totally do this. And so this whole injury thing was a very similar process to that, in that you get injured and you're like, and particularly for something like this, I feel like it was preventable, right? Like, I didn't have to run all that. And if I had done things differently, maybe I could have prevented this injury from taking place. I really admire all the concentration you're doing on technique and your feet, and you know, all that is going to help you run much longer and for a greater time. And so you're like, I put myself here, so you beat your I beat myself up for that. Mm-hmm. And I do that. I'm a pretty good debater though, so I kind of argue with myself over that, and I get over that pretty quickly. I'm fortunate, or maybe just old enough now, that I operate from a mindset of I'm the sky, not the weather. Kind of, and you know, some of the mindfulness training that you've done, that I can kind of separate myself out fairly quickly and fairly easily. Mm-hmm. Be like, this is happening to me, and not get bogged down by those negative voices that naturally rise up. And part of the feedback that came from that, Susie really shared something of kind of a river analogy of standing in a river and the negative emotions being the river rushing at you. Can either kind of pull that up and try to and hold on to it, or just stand aside and let it go. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's been kind of a helpful analogy for me. One of the other tips that came up that I've used in the past, but I've drifted away from it, and it was really good to be reminded of it, is just to set a deadline for yourself. Like, okay, you're having a little bit of a pity party. Mm-hmm. You can have a pity party till Saturday evening, and then yep, back to work. Or you know what, you got 10 minutes to just get it all out. That's amazing how that kind of works, to just kind of flush that out.
Yes, because if you don't set a deadline, that can just spiral, and it doesn't, it if you let it go on, it doesn't diminish. I used to do that in the past, and just could be weeks in a funk. And there was the thing is, like, you know, it's coming on, you know, you can feel it, and you know, like when you're going into it, and so yeah, just reminding myself, like, wait a minute, okay, no, I'm gonna feel this for X number of, you know, whatever the deadline is. And and one of the things that I've learned is that the willingness to go through that, you know, of not, you know, of just saying, okay, I'm gonna feel this for a certain amount of time, actually takes the power away from it.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. Being willing to say, okay, I'm going to go through this and it's going to end. It's like diminishes the whole feeling of the, I mean, it's still there, but it's like the power, it like takes the teeth out of it.
That's what I've learned so much from ultra running, is to give yourself time to realize everything's going to pass. And so those stupid voices are like, why did I think I could do this? That is going to pass and move along. And so once you acknowledge that and move through it, and I think writing those feelings down and then saying those feelings out loud, you can't fall into the gap of just constantly complaining about it. But if you like label it, like, I'm in a funk, this is like what you just said, and I've just got to get these things out of my head, and have a trusted partner like Brenda, you know, I'm very fortunate that I have a very special lady friend that we've been married for 31 years, and you know, it's just a great partnership of being able to say, hey, you know, this is, I don't expect you to solve this. I don't want you to do anything about it. I just got to say it. And then once I say it, it kind of releases and lets it go. When I was running Vermont 100, Keith Krieger was on our crew, and it was, I remember the aid station, it was Spirit of 76, so it was 76 miles. And I came in and I sat down in a chair and I just started complaining. And he started pep talking, you know, like, hey, you got this. And I'm like, Keith, I'm nowhere near quitting. Like, I'm going to get up and walk out of this aid station just fine. I just got to say these things. So just please listen to me. Don't try to talk to me. Got it.
Yeah, and everybody's different. I mean, some people need the pep talk, and some people is like, you just need to listen to them.
Right. And based on what I was saying, that pep talk would have been totally appropriate. I wasn't in the state of mind to be like, I got to complain for a minute. I'm fine. I'm in a good spot. But.
So, that's
it. Have you found anything that's been helpful for you on setbacks that you've had?
Of learning to catch myself, because
that's a great one.
Most of the thing that I tend to kind of flow through life, and so I kind of going with the flow, and I don't catch myself when I'm going into that, and I just kind of let myself go, and basically being too complacent with myself. And so rather than pulling myself up and say, wait a minute. Okay. You know what's happening, and you're just going to have to, you're gonna have to set a time limit for this. And so what I would not do is I would not do that. Yeah. And so I noticed that when I was doing the Pumpkin Hauler, the 100 mile that, 100 mile that I accomplished. You know, I did a DNF on the Hawk, but I was at about 37 miles. It was hot. There was a road rage incident in front of me, and the guy that almost got run over by a car. And I mean, it was like there was just crap happening, and I was starting. It was like 37. It was, and I started this whole mental downward spiral of self talk. And just feeling hot and tired, and I realized what was happening. I said, like, okay, wait a minute. Okay, that, yes, all that's true, but you've got to get your mind into a better place. And so basically accepted all of the feelings, and said, but I didn't allow that self talk to keep going, because had a long ways to go. And then when I injured my foot about 57 miles, I had this thought it was going to end my race, and my self talk was fear that I was going to have another DNF, that I dragged all my friends down to 400 miles or whatever it was to get to the race, and they were all there supporting me, and I was going to let everybody down, and a whole storm I had to unwind those feelings and put a stop to, and so it didn't devolve into fear and let that end my race. So.
Sure. Yeah. It's interesting, having seen you at for far long miles and races, the Hawk probably being the biggest of that, was you always seem to be in a very positive, cheery mood. So I think you and I probably have that in common, that outward appear more positive than what's going on inside our crazy heads.
Yeah, yeah. Well, in the Hawk, I didn't have any of that. I mean, the Hawk was very. I was able to keep myself going. I mean, until we got to the mud. I mean, I still kept in a positive mood. I just couldn't move. Because there was the trails were so slick you couldn't even walk on them. So, but yeah, each race is different. I mean, each day is different. And so, it's like the negative feelings and negative self talk can come out of anywhere. And so sometimes I catch them really well, and sometimes it's like they sneak in and tend to breed and expand. It's an ongoing process for me. I mean, it's one of the things kind of like we talked about form. I was always kind of continuing to try to hone my skills so that I get better, and not to say tell myself, oh, I'm arrived, I got it all together. I'm still working on me, and in a lot of ways. So
one of the stories, the more times we spend out on the trail that you would probably hear me tell out on the trail, is my grandfather, who many of my stories involve my grandfather, was just a tremendous influence on me. And when I was young and learning fractions, he asked me, how many times can you cut a stick of butter in half? I was like, I don't know, once. He goes, I want you to really think about this. You got a stick of butter, you cut it in half. Now you have two halves, and you can take one of those halves and cut that in half. Now you got two smaller halves, or two quarters. You can take one of those and you cut that in half. Now you've got two eighths, you cut one of those in half, and then you got two sixteenths. I want you to really think about this. How many times can you cut a stick of butter in half? And at such a young age, it was really kind of blowing my mind, and I was like, a lot? And he goes, think about this. In theory, you can always cut that stick of butter in half one more time.
Mm-hmm.
But in reality, you can only cut that stick of butter in half to where the butter is as wide as your knife, and then you're done. And that has become such a powerful metaphor for me for exactly what you were just talking about. You've never arrived. You're always tweaking and trying to get a half step closer and a half step closer. And it's not until, that's why you've got to make sure that your tools, your knives, get sharper the closer you get to that, so that you can keep making those half steps and keep making those half steps along the way. And mm-hmm. part of what I love about this journey is it's never done. And certainly for guys like you and I, and certainly that old guy Crutchfield.
yeah, he's on here. so at least he was the one who made the Red Lobster comment. So
yeah, yeah. The fact that time is counting against us now, and so now we've got to really refine what we're doing for those half steps to keep making steps forward. So.
Yeah,
Eric, this has been absolutely delightful, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you. When you talked about being older, yeah, that my, you know, after having quit running once, you know, I'm kind of at the point where it's like, okay, I don't have the time to quit again, and so so my goal is to keep going, and be one of those, you know, 85, 90 year old, you mm-hmm. know, runners that are out there still doing it. And
I met a guy when I was doing the Lincoln marathon. It was his 126th marathon, and he was late 70s, and just chipper guy and just plugging along with it. And at one point, my very special lady friend had said to me, how long do you think you're going to do this running thing? And it was purely curiosity. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like, I think she likes when I'm out of the house. So I told him that story, and he goes, people ask me that all the time. You know, I'm 78 years old and run this many marathons. How long are you going to keep doing this? He goes, my answer is I don't know, because I don't know how long I'm going to live. But I'm going to keep doing it as long as I live.
Yeah. Well, and I see people in their 40s who are making plans to, you know, when they can't run anymore. And I think, come on, you've got to have a different outlook.
Right.
This is something you can keep doing for.
It's inspiring in our sport that we, both of us, have met plenty of people older than us who are still out there doing it.
Yeah.
And so that's really encouraging to see.
Yeah, and I've seen people older than me that are running a lot faster than me, too. I mean, these guys are still still pretty quick.
Well, that's impressive that you've been able to improve your speed over time.
Yeah. And that's something I'm sure there's a limit to the speed for me, but I've been happy to be running faster. So.
That's a goal of mine. I may be able to run more miles in a month than Ted, but he still beats me pretty consistently every beer mile. So I've got to figure out how to sprint and chug a little faster.
Well, the key for the beer mile is to drink the beer faster.
Right.
And so for those who have never seen a beer mile, it's a mile, and it's every quarter mile you have to stop and chug a beer.
Yeah.
So that's it's a quarterly event for the Beer Appreciation Run group. We do it every quarter. And I have, I cannot drink that much beer, so I've always set out because it's not just the speed, it's the amount. So I just can't.
That's a very fast thing where I ask myself, why did I think I could do this?
Yeah. You know, I was thinking about, you know, that for ultra runners, I mean, we should all have shirts saying, you know, that's a really bad idea. Where do I sign up? And, you know, it's kind of our, what, with ultra runners, we kind of look at a bad idea. Like, yeah, that's a bad idea. Let's do that.
You're right.
Well, thank you a lot, Todd. I appreciate it. And thanks for, and Cindy Nelson, and I've got K-O-N-Y-K, says hi to you, Todd.
So,
Cindy, yeah. So I didn't want to even attempt to pronounce the last name. So thank you all who have watched this live too. I appreciate that. And I'll close out the broadcast. And thanks for watching this. It's been great. If you're watching this on replay, you can still send comments. I will get notified for any comments if you're not seeing this live and seeing this on replay. And have anything that you'd like to contribute or any questions you'd like to ask, I would be happy to reach out and talk with you about that. Thanks a lot, and we'll see you next time.
Hey, thank you for listening to this episode of the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast. As you know, or may have guessed, if this is your first episode, this was recorded from a Facebook Live presentation, so comments are interlaced throughout. It's a little bit different than maybe your traditional podcast episode because it serves dual purposes. But I know that some people cannot get to the Facebook Live in time, or and watching a video is different than a podcast. So repurposing those as podcast episodes. Thank you for listening to this. If you would like to get in touch with me, my website is theultramarathonmindset.com, or you can find me on Facebook at Ultramarathon Mindset. My name is Eric Dieter, and I am a mindset coach, life coach. If I can help you with anything, reach any big goals, whether it's running or life related, please message me through either my website or Facebook, and I'll be glad to help you out. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you next time.